Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of The Daily Quick Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I'm joined by the venerable Mr. Terence Corrigan. Terence, how are you?
Well, again, Nick, and yourself.
And the tall, bearded, and talkative Mr. Gabriel Krauser. How are you, sir?
Ahoy. Very well.
Very good. So we're going to try and do a sort of rapid-fire thing where we go through a lot of news stories today. So it might be a little bit different from usual, but bear with us. We'll see what we can get. Let's start off with our headline story today, and that is that Graham Smith has been cleared of racial bias allegations by the two-man arbitration panel appointed by Cricket South Africa. So Graham Smith was earlier found, I think it was earlier this year, was found to have acted in, quote, a prejudicial and discriminatory manner by the Cricket South Africa's transformation ombudsman, Advocate Dumisa Ntsebenza. And this obviously wasn't super popular with Graham Smith, so it went to an arbitration panel. And the two advocates on that arbitration panel found that there was no evidence that he had, in fact, acted in a racially discriminatory manner or prejudiced way. Gabriel, your thoughts?
In terms of cricket, I suppose it's been in a real mess politically for quite a while, and its performance on the pitch has not been great, although there's been a little bit of excitement here and there. I don't know all of the details. I'm aware that one of the allegations was that Graham Smith had made a mistake or was racist for not fielding a black wicketkeeper batsman at a time when AB de Villiers was chosen instead, which is hilarious because AB de Villiers in the independent professional league with stars from around the world hosted in India ended up being the most beloved and successful cricket player that there was. There were other blatantly mad allegations of racism. As far as I can tell, Graham Smith has not re-signed his contract. So maybe the first hearing saying you're guilty of racism and then the second one saying, no, you're not guilty, is just a way of saying goodbye, go find a job somewhere else. Really implicitly you're guilty of racism, according to some people. And so you can't stay working here, but you'll get a clear CV to go work elsewhere. I think that's, if it's what's happened, is pretty disgraceful. And I think the most important thing, I was listening to 702, Manny Wiener covered the story, and it was just so obvious how there were no question marks about who made the allegations that have been proven to be false. And why are there no consequences for making false allegations of racism in South Africa? Well, we all know why. Thank you.
Terence, any thoughts?
Well, look, as the last of the great couch potatoes, I'm probably not very well placed to discuss the cricketing merits. But this follows a trail of sorts that goes right back to the 1990s, where hefty reports are produced, which are sufficiently vague that no one really has to take responsibility for them. But they show that there's this enormous crisis. When you start to dig down, you know, you discover that we can condemn it. We can condemn this malaise and miasma of racism in general terms, but it's very, very difficult to actually put a finger on, you know, on any individual. I remember about 10 years ago, the SODIN Committee into Higher Education, I remember there was a headline, South Africa's Varsities of Shame. You actually look through that. No names are mentioned, and SODIN himself gave, he said, well, this is vulnerable because we haven't actually tried to verify any of these allegations. That's a pretty big oops. Now, so, you know, here's the thing. For a country that for which race and racism can be such a sensitive issue, it seems to me that we need to do a lot better than this. This report came out, it was the tentative findings. Well, you know, if you're going to, if you believe people have had their lives compromised because of their race, that's a very serious issue. And I think, you know, you should have more than a tentative sense of that. What's the evidence? Put it there and let the guilty parties, you know, be flayed in the court of public opinion. Oh, no, sort of it might be, and like, yeah, we're going to name you because you could be a bastard. But don't worry, you'll get to sort of shag this off in, you know, a couple of years down the line. As a certain European royal might say, we are not amused.
Indeed. Well said. All right, let's move on to our next topic. And this comes out of Pretoria, where apparently the Special Forces Training School in Murray Hill, north of Pretoria, is under threat. And you may think, what foreign enemy has infiltrated the country? Well, it turns out there doesn't seem to be one. It seems to just be under threat from the neighboring illegal squad camp. The military base apparently is suffering from the theft of its pipes and electricity infrastructure, which have caused it to lose access to electricity and water. And as a result, the management of the base appear to be using their own money and maybe some money from the soldiers and things to run generators to make sure that it has electricity. They have also installed JoJo tanks to try and catch rainwater, and they're asking for public funding to see whether they can install some boreholes to ensure that they have water. So we talked a little bit about this before the show. Terrence, not maybe the best way to train your soldiers, but it probably has some certain similarities to the Democratic Republic of Congo.
I think you're priming these guys for survival in a hostile environment. I mean, you know, like in an enclosed space without services, surrounded by a hostile or indifferent to hostile population. There is a direct line between this and what you've just seen in KZN with the washing away of infrastructure. Nature may have taken out big water pipes on the south coast. Here, you know, we've got desperate people doing so. Reading some of the news commentary around this, there should be patrols around the base. I would say no. You know, that's a Homer Simpson level thing. Why are there no patrols around your base?
That's like what soldiers do. It's patrol things.
Yeah. But, you know, once again, long, long history of this going back I remember the first inklings of this were sort of pre-1994. We had all this equipment that wasn't being serviced, wasn't being maintained. We've used the army kind of as an employment scheme. We have an aging defense force whose ability to be deployed is questionable. I also see that reservists called up for during COVID haven't been paid. I mean, once again, get serious. If you want an army, you know, fund them, use them, recruit them properly. If you want some sort of make work scheme, you know, national gendarmerie or whatever, where you can go out and just be a visible presence in high crime areas. But, you know, an army that is not kept up well is not something you want in your books.
Right. And this is, I think, one of the things that annoys me the most about this. Obviously, it's bad to have a badly run army, as just sort of a matter of fact, but it's even worse when you're still doing sort of deployments to combat zones, where often the South Africans have to carry a lot of weight, because some of our tech and equipment is pretty good stuff. And as a result, you know, you're putting people who are too old, maybe out of shape, maybe are not supported properly, in harm's way. And that's just a complete sort of abuse of the nation's soldiers. Gabriel, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of deploying South African soldiers, I'm not sure how effective the track record is. If you'll remind me, I think we've been talking about or sending troops to South Sudan, Guinea-Bissau, sort of really difficult places, and every
Central African Republic and DRC as well, and the Comores.
Right. And every time the AU meets up, there's a bunch of hand-wringing and chest beating, and between this convention and the next one, we're actually going to make a big difference and it's going to be better. It's not better. You mentioned tech. Before it got to the stage where the military base in Pretoria was being besieged by Praetorians. A little Latin joke for you.
Praetorian guard.
Indeed.
The Praetorian squatters, perhaps, in this example.
Exactly. The Praetorian squatters are showing South Africans just how much this is not a country. I mean, before that, we had Denel, which really was one of the more sophisticated producers of certain helicopters and artillery units and various other kinds of clever things, which is what happens when you have a slightly embargoed, embattled apartheid state, which is plowing a lot of money into R&D on military stuff. It's kind of a terrible legacy, but it's one that could have kept a smart army going that could have helped neighboring African countries keep the peace, certainly could have been very useful in Mozambique, where lots of people have been killed in the last few years by pretty brutal terrorists. Donnell's IP was basically stolen before everything else was stolen. And as far as I remember, its staff still haven't been paid in the last few months. And that's after being semi-paid for a long period of time. So this is the sort of the tip of the iceberg, but if you sort of turn the iceberg upside down and it's the sort of, it's the little bit at the pit, the bottom of the pit, it's terribly embarrassing.
If I can say one thing in conclusion, situations like Angola, like Mozambique, the big advantage a conventional army has over that is its training and its resources. Mobility through helicopters, gunships, that sort of thing. I wonder if we don't sort of end up just deploying, infantry boots on the ground, and they essentially end up fighting at a disadvantage because they're outnumbered. The ordnance is pretty much equivalent, and they're fighting as people who know the territory.
No, that's a very good point. And that gap is being filled now by Rwanda. And Rwanda, there are many things to be said about that country, but I'm not sure if its army has the best track record. So I'd prefer South Africans to be maybe doing some of this peacekeeping.
Let's just remember we had a submarine that reportedly came short in a run-in with a shark. We had a nuclear power station that went down because it was sucking in seaweed into its water filtration basin. There was a joke about Robert Mugabe trying to go to war with the UK, but he didn't have enough petrol to get there. Well, it turns out we didn't have enough to get sort of our troops into Lesotho within living memory.
No,
maybe we should leave the peacekeeping to other peacekeepers. Who knows?
No, fair enough.
I suspect that the Rwandan army makes you permanently peaceful. No, those guys are hardcore.
No, they actually do know what they're doing, which is what makes me so nervous. Anyway, peacekeepers. Let's move on to our next story, and this is Gabriel. Today, you, as a head of campaigns, released a media statement about the Institute of Race Relations submission on health regulations. Can you go ahead?
Okay, so we've been through this before on the Daily French Show, but I spent a little bit of time with the Daily French Show viewer over the weekend and realized that the situation is so outrageous that people hear it and then they just don't believe it or they forget about it. So I'm going to say it again. We are literally entering a permanent lockdown. On the 4th, 5th of April, the state of disaster was ended, but under the Disaster Management Act, lockdown measures were kept in place for 30 days. Those include mask mandates indoors, vaccine passes outdoors, and 50% business and religious place of worship capacity limitations pretty much across the board. Okay? That lapses on the 3rd or 4th of May, after the 30-day window closes. But the National Health Act, which is a permanent thing, the Minister of Health, Joe Patler, has tabled regulations where the period of public comment was originally closing on 15th April. It then actually was extended to close yesterday, so we submitted it before that. What these regulations do is take the lockdown, pick up the ball from where it is being left by the DMA, and run with it forever. It's as long as there is coronavirus in circulation, as long as there is measles, tuberculosis, various other notifiable medical conditions, there are 8 measures put in place, pseudo lockdown measures, which include being effectively able to arrest someone for sneezing, for being suspected to show symptoms of COVID-19. We have repeatedly asked we asked the presidency at the beginning, soon after that regulation was put in place, how many people have been arrested for sneezing? The president said, we don't know. Please ask the Department of Justice and the Department of Health. We asked the Department of Justice and the Department of Health. The Department of Justice hasn't replied yet. The Department of Health finally got back to our lawyers sort of a few weeks late and said, the person who was writing the letter went on sick leave and will be back. So please look forward to the reply. So we will find out. Maybe that person sneezed and was arrested.
Bad day for people with allergies out there.
So some of these things are ridiculous and not going to be enforced, but some of them will continue to be enforced in big stadiums. It's going to be impossible to have big events in music venues, theater venues, the entertainment industry, the tourism industry is going to still be under the cosh. And official places where masks get enforced are going to continue enforcing those masks, despite the fact that people like Shabir Mahdi and Glenda Gray said that in South Africa, the N95 mask, the proper mask, that's a different story. That works. But the ordinary cloth mask, the way people are wearing it here, there is, I think the quote was, no meaningful reduction in transmission that is legible from that. So we signed our opposition to that, and we're thankful to the thousands of people who endorsed it and the 50,000 plus South Africans who signed up to IRR campaigns to stop lockdown abuse. Thank you very much.
Right. So, Terence, any final thoughts on this before we move on?
Yeah, I believe I have performed the only on-air sneeze in the history of Daily Friends, so they've got it on camera. And I must say, our esteemed viewer, first name, last name, says, Gabriel, we love you. I don't know why no one ever writes, they love me. So.
We all love you.
All right, let's move on to our next story before we get too enamored with each other. And this is a story that made headlines over the weekend. Busisizwe Mavuso, who is an Eskom board member and also the head of Business Leadership SA, I think she recently said some comments actually that we praised on the Daily Friend show a while ago, a month or two ago. But anyway, she had a big public spat at the at SCOPA, which is the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, where she said, look, SCOPA is looking for answers from the Eskom board, but these aren't answers we can give. This is a political problem. This is an ANC mess. And trying to pin all of this on the problems that have been with Eskom for a very long time before this board is even in place, trying to blame them on us is completely ridiculous. This is a problem, a political problem, basically. She was attacked and accused of engaging in, so she walked out of the SCOPA meeting after she sort of had this fight.
All was kicked out. It's not clear. Hey?
Yeah, it's a little bit vague. She was accused of engaging in what were described, I think, by the SCOPA chairperson, who is actually an IFP guy, Mukoleko Hluenga. Sorry about that. It's pronounced much better for this. And so she was accused of being engaged in gutter politics. She went on radio, I think, this morning to say, I'm not going to be told to behave like I'm a naughty 12-year-old schoolgirl. For crying out loud, I don't even talk to my 10-year-old son in that matter. If we want SOEs to be filled with people who behave and who will be pliable, we must say so. We must make those appointments accordingly. I do not sit on that Eskom board as an ANC deployee, as the chairman of SCOPA puts it. Apparently, it is thinking that is problematic. When we get to those boards, we sit as independent professionals. So, this is quite interesting because it is someone breaking from sort of what someone who would normally be described as an ANC deployee, breaking from the kind of political orthodoxy and criticizing the ANC for Eskom's failings in public, which you don't see every day. Or am I making too much of this? Gabriel, what do you think?
I'm going to give the gloomy view. So I think Busisiwe Mavuso is sometimes excellent. She has, for example, been a pretty strong critic of both the expropriation bill and of the expropriation without compensation attempt to amend the Constitution. At the same time, she has also been recorded as saying things like, the government's problem is it's not being harsh enough on white monopoly capital, which it needs to grab by the throat and drag into the future like a small child that doesn't know what's good for it. But if it just takes the medicine, will ultimately come out better off. I think that in this instance, I remember Jabu Mabuza, the former chairperson of Eskom, during the Zuma days and the early Ramaphosa days, saying things like Eskom is at least 33% overstaffed and intimating that it might be 50% overstaffed, saying effectively that unless you cut out the rot, you are not going to be able to balance the books. Since Mabuza was replaced, there has been very little talk, either from the board or the CEO, of making serious cost savings by letting go of redundant staff. Instead, wherever there have been opportunities to reduce staff numbers, it's largely been by way of sort of golden handshakes that are just as likely to evacuate the most qualified and effective staff members as they are to do anything else. So I miss Jabu Mabuza. Of course, our colleague Sarah Gon said that I was a little bit naive in my celebration of him, because there are, you know, he's got a history which is full of ups and downs. Why am I very skeptical about celebrating Busisiwe Mavuso on this one? For the simple reason that the line that she's taking is very attractive, both to the Ramaphosa camp, which of course would like to blame everything on what was, and say state capture was very terrible. This again is how the story was told on Mandy Wiener's show today, for example. This is just evidence that all the bad stuff in ESCOM was in the past, and now we need to support the president and support this board member who's being honest about it. Dot, 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 question mark. And then what? What is the practical comeuppance? What is the upshot? What is actually being pushed for by way of a practical plan? Where's the real tension? That's what I don't know. If there's a particular personnel fight that can be illuminated, if there's a particular policy question, for example, about privatizing the whole of Medupi and Kusile, if Busisiwe Mavuso is on the side of doing that and she's getting flack from Parliament for recommending that, then I'm behind her. But at the moment, it feels like she's exciting, she's energetic, she's obstreperous, and South Africans want that after the lethargic sort of state of leadership that we've seen for so long. But that's just a mood. I'm not interested in the mood. I'm interested in the idea. What is her idea? I don't know. And that's why I'm very skeptical.
Terence, your thoughts?
Look, I think, you know, like all of us, she's obviously an imperfect human being, but I think her record has been fairly solid. And I think that to call things out in these terms, in that forum, shows a degree of bottle that very few public figures show. I agree with Gabriel, though. What exactly, where do we go from here? That's the question that demands an answer. But to point out that political manipulation is at the root of this, yeah, you know, that's been the elephant in the room. I mean, you know, you go back to the scandal around the boiler contracts and Chancellor House and whatever, about the pressure to get your demographics right, ignoring warnings that were coming out of ESCOM in the late 1990s to actually build more capacity because we were going to run out, I think, by 2007, which is pretty much what happened. But those were all political decisions. One of the very few things, if not the only thing, Thabo Mbeki ever apologized for. So yeah, you know, she's right on this.
Indeed, and hopefully more people on that board speak out and speak out specifically as to what the problems are that government is standing in the way of. All right, so we don't have a lot of time left, but let's very quickly go through this one. The Sunday Times reported on Sunday that the ANC is moving away from expropriation without compensation. Instead, it's going to move towards creating a land reform and agriculture development agency, which will encourage private landowners, particularly sort of farmers, absentee landlords, the groups who are normally used as justification for expropriation without compensation, to voluntarily donate land for land reform projects, and that this agency will then also ensure that people are properly trained to farm that land, disadvantaged people who it's given to. I don't know how this is any different from what we currently have in terms of a land reform department, but anyway, this is being talked about in the Sunday Times as though it's a big shift away from expropriation without compensation. Terence, should we take this story seriously?
Well, I think it's sort of true as far as it goes that they want to, that they want land donations. The idea that this is some sort of new approach, no, this has been in the been doing the rounds since at least 2018, and I think before. And I do remember, I think Ramaphosa actually made a comment about this in 2018, that he's been approached by farmers who want to donate land, but there's no mechanism to do it. So if this is the mechanism, that's great. But this has always kind of ticked alongside everything else. It's not new, and I don't think it displaces anything. Ronald Lamola said that okay, so they lost the constitutional amendment, but they can still do it they can still do EWC with the tools that they have. So no, I think this is an angle that a journalist has put in the story, and I think somewhat misleading.
Gabriel, your thoughts?
Yeah, let's remember what the right idea is. Simple low-hanging fruit right idea is to privatize the land, the government land, on which sleep between 17 and 22 million South Africans. You know, if you want a radical new idea, that's the radical new idea. If the ANC wants to take a truly reformist new approach, that's the approach they can take. Of course, what they've done with title deeds, with privatizing government land that people effectively live on like vassal peasants, with no means to trade, no means to borrow, no title deed to get a ticket to Nampo or John Deere or any place to buy serious equipment, and therefore they sit at the mercy of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, which has a huge budget for tractors and often very, very few tractors to show for that huge budget, and even less by way of petrol to put in the tractor to get it to the farm on time. People who are stuck farming like that, depending on the government, are completely in a hopeless position, right? And the number of people I've spoken to who've had to go and bribe government officials with bottles of whiskey or goats in order to get the mealy grain seeds to plant, or the tick spray to use that should be given to them for free according to the law, but that they need to bribe to get because there is no real law there, is very frustrating thing to remember. But be that as it may, there is a way to deal with this. It's to hand out title deeds. What has actually happened? Now and then, once in a blue moon, President Ramaphosa will go around and hand out a couple of hundred title deeds or two dozen title deeds or at most, you know, 700 title deeds. And there'll be a big fanfare and they'll say, hey, the ANC's got a brand new idea. Give title deeds to people in rural areas or give title deeds to people in RDP houses. As if it's never happened before and as if doing it 20 at a time is actually going to solve the problem. And then with goldfish media treatment, that issue then is able to go away and come back as a brand new idea, 5 months later. This is exactly what Terence is describing with the donations. Ramaphosa put one of those farmers who were so keen on donations on the presidential panel for advice on expropriation without compensation. He came out saying, don't do it. And then I suppose wasn't heard from much again, which is why they had to start all over again. I think it's very cynical. I think there's a very real good thing to do, which is to privatize that land that government owns, roughly, you know, a fifth of the country, maybe more, especially much more if you can't buy rainfall and quality of soil. The idea of this donation drive, I worry, is a big setup. EWC is being pursued through the Land Courts Bill, through the Expropriation Bill, which are currently on the table and can pass this year. But if that doesn't work and the ANC and the EFF gather up a two-thirds majority again in 2024 because people stay away from voting rather than vote against them, or because Peter Bruce says you must vote for the good ANC in order to get the bad ANC serious about reform, we will sit in a position where the expropriation without compensation route will once again go through a constitutional amendment channel, if that's necessary. And at that point, the argument will be something like this. In 2022, as we came out of the coronavirus pandemic, we set up the system to allow for donations to go through, and only 200,000 hectare have been donated through that. But this country has 110 million hectare. And so you can see that donations voluntarily are not going to get us where we want to go. In fact, they'll forget about all of the donations that have already happened. And I see in the comments some people mentioning donations that have already happened because, a la the goldfish, Once you start with this new platform, that means all previous things must be forgotten. I'm sorry to sound so grumpy, but I spent my time in home affairs in the police station, and I just don't think that this new idea is a new or a real idea. People who want to make donations can already do that. They don't really need the government's help for it. Really, this is just a distraction from the expropriation bill, from the land courts bill, and from the fact that EWC will come back as soon as it can.
Indeed, spending the morning with bureaucracy, government bureaucracy, is never going to do anyone any favors for their mood. Anyway, that's all the time we have for today.
It's like a political tapeworm, if you think about it. Yeah. By the way, I see some of our esteemed viewers are discussing Dundee and Glencoe. I grew up in Dundee, so I know Dundee.
Excellent. All right. Well, that's all the time we have for today. So thank you very much, everyone, for listening and for watching. And we will see you tomorrow on the Daily Friend Show. Have an awesome day, everyone. Cheers.